So as you may have noticed, we have chosen themes for our church year. So every month we have a different theme. And the sermons and songs for each Sunday, as well as the lessons for our RE program, will be connected to that theme. In October, our theme is Native Wisdom. So we'll begin with creation stories today, stories that honor the wisdom of nature, of all beings, all our relatives, with whom we live in an interconnected way. Next Sunday, October 8th, we will commemorate Indigenous Peoples Day and learn about the doctrine of discovery and how it is still alive today and the cause of resistance of many First Nations peoples. On the 15th, we will have a guest preacher, Reverend Dorothy Emerson. And on October 29th, we will commemorate the Days of the Dead, an ancient Mesoamerican and Latin American ceremony to remember and honor our dearly departed. That will be a multi-generational service, and I will share the pulpit with our own Xiomara Tapia. Thank you for that. So this month, you will hear our children singing songs about nature, singing songs about Mother Earth, learning to play the drums, and gifting us with stories of old turtle. So by having monthly themes, we get more than one opportunity to reflect and be inspired by Indigenous wisdom. Along with the beauty of the poetry, the songs, and the stories, we will also lift up the painful history of how Indigenous peoples and their sacred lands have been treated and mistreated. We will affirm our resistance against injustice and our ongoing struggles for water, for the right to practice our religion, and the protection of sacred lands. These sacred lands are not so far away. They may be right in your backyard. I heard from Guadalupe Middleton just last night that near her house in Castro Valley, there is an Olón burial site that was discovered when the developers were digging up. So there are remains, there are sacred remains in that spot that make it sacred land. So let us take a moment, a deep breath, to acknowledge that we are on sacred land, on borrowed land, alone land. Let us ask in our minds and in our hearts for permission to be in this sacred land and for the courage to protect it. Let us express our gratitude for the creek, for the plants and the trees and the deer and hummingbirds, for the butterflies and the cats and skunks and squirrels and mice that share this sacred land with us. May we be worthy of this beauty. May we feel connected to all these beings that surround us. May they receive our love, our respect. May we also be thankful for our gardener, Walter, hello, in the back there. Walter communes with the plants and trees. He knows their cycles. He pays attention to their health. He nourishes them. He works together with them to multiply their beauty so that we can enjoy that. He's also shared with me that gardening is his way to connect with the memory of his beloved mother. And so gardening is his spiritual practice, and we all get to enjoy the product of that spiritual practice. Thank you, Walter. And thank you to all the gardeners here, to those of you who collect and share seeds from your gardens, to all who volunteer at the animal shelter, to all who have opened your hearts to animal companions in your home, when to add one more would have been too much, and you said yes. Thank you to all of you who open your hearts to animal companions in many ways. Maybe just when you're hiking and you see them free in nature. That's your way to commune with them. So, how many of us feel a deep connection to animals, to plants? Yes, to rocks and trees and hummingbirds and butterflies. Yes. So I want to ask, how does indigenous wisdom inform and guide your everyday life? Because sometimes we're not even aware that we're thinking in that way or that we're doing things in that way that honor, right? And that keep going, that circle of good medicine, of good attitude and behavior toward our four-legged, winged, and water creatures, right? So I want to invite you to turn to your neighbor and share about either your animal spirit, how you spend time with animals, whether that's a spiritual practice for you, or how are you inspired by indigenous wisdom in your everyday life? Let's take about 3.5 minutes. All right, I am so glad that there is lively conversation. So now it's your chance to share with me. Can people call out, do you have an animal spirit? Turtle, cat, owl, dog, giraffe, in your home? Earthworm, goats, sea turtles, bears, skunks, worms, possums, crabs. Oh. I can't. All right, rat. Raccoons. Snakes. Let's stop there. Don't forget the salamander and the deer. Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you all for sharing. And what are some ways that you are inspired by indigenous Native American wisdom? Is there anything that you can point to that you have adapted and adopted that helps you in your everyday life? Drumming. Thank you for that. Yes.
Music.
Thank you. Earth prayers. Say that again, Donnie. Having rocks. In the front yard. Thank you.
Seeing everything as alive.
Seeing earth alive.
Propagation.
Propagation. Thank you. Thank you. So in the Mesoamerican tradition, it is believed that whenever a baby is born, they're born with a particular animal spirit called a nahual, to protect and guide them so they may never walk alone. In the Popol Vuh, which is the sacred book of the Maya K'iche people, we encounter creation stories where there are monkey gods, little chihuahua dogs guarding the gates of the underworld, so the version of St. Peter is a dog. And a supreme divine being in the shape of a plumed serpent. The names of the creators include Coyote, Midwife, Heart of the Sky, and many more. The Mayan creation stories feature a creator in the shape of a glittering light enclosed in green and blue Quetzal feathers. When referring to animals, they are called the guardians of the mountains, the guardians of the forest. Deer, snakes, pumas, jaguars, birds, and all animals are called precious. But then the people came into the picture. And in this creation story, things changed, and not for the better. So the animals did what? They formed a union and they organized. They recruited others, not just other four-legged or winged like them. They even recruited to their cause cooking pots, tortilla grills, beans, water jugs, and other beings that did not look like them and did not live like them. As they conspired to resist, there was a great flood, and the animals came into people's homes seeking shelter. Everything spoke. The water jars, the tortilla griddles, the dogs, the stones, the turkeys. And they said to the people, "You caused us pain. We were undone because of you. We just watch you and you keep us down. You throw us around. You keep a stick ready just so you can hit us. How could you not have known? How could you not have known? Pain, that is all you've done for us. Since you believe we didn't feel pain, now you try it." And the people ran away. And the people went to climb on top of the roof of the houses, but the houses shook and they collapsed. They tried to climb up the trees, but the trees shook them away and they fell down. They went to hide in the caves, but the caves slammed shut in their faces. This part of the creation story ends with a happy ending for the animals. Not so much for the humans. They successfully overthrew the people and their tyranny. In the Cheyenne tradition, tribal people allow all animals, all vegetables and minerals, the same or even greater privileges than humans. In the Cheyenne creation story, Maheo, the All Spirit, creates water, light, sky, air, and the peoples of the water, not necessarily two-legged. And Maheo says, "How beautiful their wings are in the light as the birds flew into the sky. The loon was the first to come back to surface from the lake." Maheo the loon said, looking around, "Maheo is everywhere. You have made us sky and light to fly in, and you have made us water to swim in," the loon said to Maheo. It sounds ungrateful to want even more things, and yet we still do. When we are tired of swimming and tired of flying, we should like a little dry, solid place where we could rest and walk and make our nests. "Give us a place to build our nests, our homes, please, Maheo," said the loon. "So be it," said Maheo, "but to make such a place, I must have your help. I cannot do it alone. I need all of you. I must have help if I am to create more." So in this creation story, the animals are the creators. In contrast, the Judeo-Christian creation story features a creator who makes everything and tells everything he created what to do and how to behave. So there's a separation there between animals and humans and between them and God. In the Cheyenne World Vision, all creatures participate in the ongoing creation and all things are sacred. Maheo articulates the power and creative capacities of all beings and recognizes the wisdom of all beings. Together, Maheo and the water beings create the earth, and with the help of these water beings, then creates first man, first woman, and the creatures that will live with them. In the Judeo-Christian creation story, God commands and man rules. Woman is subjugated to man, and both woman and serpent are cursed and punished for eternity. similar to the Mayan Cosmovision, the Cheyenne see all creatures as relatives and co-creators and as part of a whole. Knowledge and wisdom emanates from every being. Awareness of being is not circumscribed to one species, but possessed by all. In her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teachings of Plants, Robin Wall Kimmerer, a botanist and a citizen of the Potawatomi Nation, teaches us about language and how it can either separate or unites us. She says, "In that moment, I could smell the water of the bay, watch it rock against the shore, and hear it sift onto the sand. A bay is a noun only if water is dead. When bay is a noun, it is defined by humans trapped between its shores and contained by the word. But the verb to be a bay releases the water from bondage and lets it live. To be a bay holds the wonder that is, for this moment, the living water has decided, to shelter itself between these shores, conversing with the cedar roots and a flock of baby birds. Because it could do otherwise, become a stream or an ocean or a waterfall, and there are verbs for that too, to be a hill, to be a sandy beach, to be a day, a Saturday, all are possible verbs in a world where everything is alive. Water, land, and even the day. The language, a mirror for seeing the animacy of everything in the world. The life that pulses through all things, through pines and mushrooms. This is the language I hear in the woods. This is the language that lets us speak of what wells up all around us. The Potawatomi understanding of what it means to be animate diverges from the list of attributes we all heard and learned in Biology 101. She continues, in Potawatomi 101, rocks are animate, as are mountains and water and fire and places. Beings that are imbued with spirit, sacred songs, our medicines, drums, even stories, all are animate. English doesn't give us many tools for incorporating respect for animacy. In English, you are either a human or a thing. She says, when I'm in the woods teaching my students the gift of plants and how to call them by their name, I try to be mindful of my language, to be bilingual between the lexicon of science and the grammar of animacy. She says, I hope I am also teaching them to know the world as a neighborhood of non-human residents, to know that, as eco-theologian Thomas Berry has written, we must say of the universe that it is a communion of subjects, not a collection of things. Maybe a grammar of animacy could lead us to whole new ways of living in the world, with a democracy of species, not a tyranny of one, with moral responsibility to water and wolves, and with a legal system that recognizes the standing of other species. Kimmerer invites us to orient ourselves or reorient ourselves at the intersections of indigenous wisdom and science, to embrace the notion that plants and animals are our oldest teachers. She proposes that in order for us to awaken to a greater ecological consciousness, we must acknowledge and celebrate our reciprocal relationship with the rest of creation. For only when we hear the language of other beings are we capable of understanding the generosity of Mother Earth and learn to give our own gifts in return. End quote. So how do we move forward? What are we called to do? 2 years ago at our General Assembly in Portland, I was blessed to be able to participate in a profoundly moving public witness action. For the first time, my denominational leaders invited me to participate as an Indigenous person in this great ritual. It was a proud moment for me to share the stage with my mentor, Reverend Clyde Grubbs, who you met at my installation ceremony, who is a member of the Cherokee people. I was proud to share the stage with the elders and leaders from the Lummi Nation and the Chinook peoples. The first speaker then, Julius Jay, remembered his great-great-grandmother born in 1888 telling stories of walking across streams and rivers on the backs of salmon. It was that plentiful. Today, the Lummi Nation is engaged in a political struggle and spiritual one, demanding recognition of the Treaty of 1855 signed by Julius Jay's great-great-grandfather, which would ban the building of a coal port at Cherry Point, sacred land for them. Cherry Point is specifically mentioned in their creation stories. Their struggles include health concerns for farm-raised fish and the connection between the consumption of farm-raised fish and cancer in the wider community, but in particular affecting his particular community. Julius remembered that the river near his home used to be deep and carry clear water. Now, he says, the river is shallow and murky. The salmon don't swim upstream. Under threat of destruction, he mourns for Cherry Point, a sacred site. He also mourns many aunts and uncles, his own 4-year-old daughter and his wife, who died of cancer just 6 months before he spoke at our General Assembly. He said, I am a fisherman. I am a son of the sea, and it is my duty to protect it. He said, we all have a purpose, a common purpose, the greater good for all. Being a voice for all, including Mother Earth and all within her who cannot speak, at least our English language. We are called to do this, he said, to inspire someone to be the change, to be courageous, to defend Mother Earth. He said, you are the difference makers. Indeed, we are. We too can inspire others, and we can affect change. Last April, I was invited by Jennifer Coney to offer testimony before a subcommittee of the Hayward Area Recreational District. We were asking them to ban 3 events which are part of the Castro Valley Royal Ranch Rodeo. And those 3 events are mutton busting, which allows children to ride on the backs of sheep, wild cow milking, which entails separating a newborn calf from its mother and having the cow chased around the arena by cowboys trying to pin her down to violently milk her as entertainment. 1 year, it's reported that the cow was so distraught that she crashed against a fence and broke her neck. The 3rd event is the use of electrical prods on horses to get them to move quicker. So there we were. Frank was there. You were there. Mary, so many other people. There was about a dozen of us, and many of us spoke and gave testimony, and we were there for hours into the night. And after hours of heartbreaking testimonies from ourselves and veterinarians, teachers, concerned citizens, and parents, and the other side, the proposal failed, and the rodeo will continue to allow these practices. Now, we were not calling for an end to the rodeo, just an end to these 3 practices. And you may be asking, why bring up this seemingly just political issue during a sermon? when we should be talking about spiritual matters? Why interrupt the lovely creation stories and Native American narratives because the rodeo sheep are our relatives? Because the rodeo horses are our relatives? Because the cows and the calves are our relatives? Because we care. As Julius Jay of the Lummi Nation taught us, they need us to be their voices. We are being called to raise awareness and defend them against abuse. The rodeo need not include these practices in order to entertain and draw great crowds. This is where the political meets the spiritual. I believe that having children witness and participate in the mistreatment of these animals as sport and entertainment is immoral. Now, next year, we're not giving up. We're going back. And we'll go back every year until it changes. And I invite you to talk to Jennifer or me and learn more about it, get more information. I hope you will join our efforts. We will keep going back because this is how change happens. Beloveds, today, let us renew our commitment to defend Mother Earth and all beings within her. Let us hold in our hearts all beings in danger of extinction, whether they be four-legged, winged, water creatures, or two-legged. Let us hold in our hearts all who are mistreated, and let us send them our compassion and loving kindness with our breath, right here, right now. Let us think of our rivers, mountains, and forests, and all plant life as animate, spiritual beings capable of being our medicine and teachers. May we honor and rejoice in the interconnected web of life of which we are all a part. May we continue to live in right relationship with the whole of creation. May it be so. Ashe. And blessed be.